Taproot has been merged, and we are going to get into it in today's Guys Take episode. We've talked about it a lot, and the code has finally dropped, and this is, you know, the beginning of the climb up the mountain, and there is no activation details yet, but we're going to get all into it with today's Guys Take episode. Taproot 2020, baby. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, and this is a Guy's Take episode all about Taproot. So I haven't been able to tweet it out because I got suspended for quoting someone who used the C word debating some libertarian nonsense. So I got temporarily suspended for hateful speech or something like that. I don't think their algorithm can read context. But, you know, such is Twitter, such is social media. So I'm good to take a Twitter break today. But I did scan through, luckily, I scanned through my feed and I was happy to announce this to the insider crew, to the Satoshi Audionauts group that we've got for supporters to the show. And am super, super jacked that Taproot code has been merged. So this is basically, just for the people who don't know what the hell that means that for the repository where we get the code from on GitHub to run Bitcoin, now has the Taproot code in it. But this does not mean that it's activated. This does not mean that you can download a client that has it in it yet. This literally just means the code is done. That's basically what that means. There's not going to be any more changes. I mean, there still technically could be, but it's been put into the code in such a way that if you wanted to run it, technically you could. It's there. It's packaged. It's in the GitHub code for the Bitcoin Core client, but there isn't an activation thing yet. So, and again, we've talked about this in the past on the show, and that is that whether or not we do like a BIP 8 or a BIP 9 activation, BIP 9 being one where we say you've got a year to upgrade and then 6 months to activate, and if not, then we have to start all over. BIP 8, a whole bunch of acronyms and stuff here. Sorry if this is confusing, but there's Model 8 and there's Model 9. Model 9 is the we see if everybody activates and give up or start over if it doesn't. And then number 8 is we say we're downloading it and we're, you know, running this thing, and everybody who does, it will activate in a year, end of story. And if you don't upgrade, then, you know, it will just be a users are using different code or like slightly less secure than you know, potentially the whole network upgrading, you know, because it is a soft fork upgrade. So technically some miners and some users can use it without everyone using it, but it just runs a much higher risk of something going wrong for Taproot users, or, you know, something breaking or somebody doing a double spin from a Taproot account to a regular. So basically, you know, you want everybody to upgrade. Like, that's the whole point. Full nodes need to enforce this thing. And there's been a lot of contention about which route to take. But I kind of agree with what seems to be the consensus at this point, is that we're going with number 8. That's what SegWit was. That's what, if for everybody who has heard about the user-activated soft fork, when the miners essentially refused to upgrade without everyone basically, you know, a pork, putting in like, you know, have you have like pork spending and all the crap, the corrupt crap that gets written on the back of a bill that gets pushed through Congress. Well, that's kind of how I liken or analogize what happened with SegWit. Is they were like, okay, yeah, we'll do SegWit for you. Everybody loves SegWit. We're all good with that. But you're going to take our hard fork with it. We're going to write our hard fork on the back of it. And you don't get SegWit unless you break the network per our new code. And user-activated SoftFork said basically a big giant middle finger and said, we call your bluff. We're activating SegWit. Suck it. You join us or leave. You can do whatever you want. Nobody wants your shitcoin. And we won. And I ran that client and I was very happy about that middle finger. So I guess before we really get into, I want to talk a little bit about Taproot. Just a thank you to, I don't know, everybody who's been in Bitcoin and done all this and listens to Bitcoin Audible. It's really cool when moments like this come along because we're on the verge of activating Taproot and we're getting closer. And this was just a major step along that route. You know, it's just awesome. I love everybody. Thank you all for being in Bitcoin and taking this insane journey. Thank you to my patrons. Thank you to Hexa Wallet for supporting the show. I know I've talked a lot about their features recently, but I just got to say about that mobile wallet, the thing that gets me about Hexa, because I just did this yesterday again. And I can't understand. And Taproot should really make this like stupid obvious that we should be doing this more. And hopefully a lot of other mobile and or desktop wallets implement this. But still to this day, Hexa is the only one I know that does it. Is that I can just keep adding recipients to a transaction. Is that I'm literally just selecting people in my contacts list. I'm scanning a new address or scanning a new wallet, wherever the hell I want to send Bitcoin, and I can send quote unquote like 10 transactions in one, and I save a lot on the bulk of the transaction fees. It's just batching built in, and it's as simple as it gets. So I'm hoping, I mean, Taproot is going to make that even more efficient. So when these things come and like people start updating their wallets, like the mobile wallets and you know, all the wallet software, it'll be really exciting to see. But just thank you to everybody who supports Bitcoin Audible and makes this possible. I'll bug Anant really bad at Hexa and make sure they, I'll keep bugging them until they get Taproot. I want them to be out the gate, out the gate with it. So there's a lot of different benefits to Taproot. And we'll just kind of go over again what Taproot is, why we want it for Bitcoin. Because like I'll just see like random comments, people talk about it's scaling solution, and it's like, oh, it's not scaling. Like there is a benefit to being able to squeeze more out of a block, right? And this is just by the nature of, again, it takes less data to do the same things. That's at the heart of what Taproot is. It's compacting everything as densely as we can for transaction. Well, in this case, for script and signature data. So signature, that's the original, like the previous, like really big soft fork, again, that we just talked about, was SegWit, and that means segregated witness. Witness refers to the signature. So what this essentially did was that it made a new spot to put the signature data for the transactions. And this, it was actually to fix a bug, but it helped in another way, is it allowed us to count it separately versus that old 1 megabyte limit. Because the signature data is the biggest part of a transaction, or at least the one part of a transaction that is the biggest of any like single like piece of data in the transaction. And then when you're writing a script on a transaction, is that makes that data even bigger. Like every single time you add a new instruction, every single time you add a new output or a new key, anything like that. Like for instance, like if you have a multisig transaction, even if it's from one input to one output, is a lot bigger than a single key one input to one output transaction. And of course, because of that, all that extra data being there, A, it costs more because it takes up more space, but B, you're also showing everybody what's going on. You're telling everybody that this is a multi-signature and this is exactly how many keys it takes to unlock. It's publicly broadcast. So if anybody knows that that is yours, they also know how many keys are involved and what level of complexity any of this is. And this is why we know roughly what the size of the Lightning Network is. We can actually just look at the transactions that open and close channels, count the number of the ones that open channels, count the number of ones that close the channels, and then just subtract. And that's the size of the Lightning Network. Now, there are like kind of like little caveats there, and because not all transactions like in this way or channels are totally ubiquitous, I couldn't give you the explicit like real sharp details that do this, but there are variations, you know, like the four different explorers will tell you the Lightning Network is a different size. I'm not 100% sure what it is. And it does have to do with how to distinguish private channels, which are increasingly much, much, much more common. Because you can basically ask the gossip protocol. You can actually ask the Lightning Network, like for all the nodes and channels that are available. And you build your routing table, kind of like your router in your house. Excuse me, your router in your house, or it's constantly, or your modem and your ISP, they're constantly asking for all the possible routes on the network and which regions have what, and are building a quote unquote routing table for the internet. Very similarly, every Lightning node is getting its own image of the Lightning Network. How many channels are there? What's the bandwidth on those channels? How many different ways can I get to my destination, et cetera, et cetera. It's actually pretty fascinating how many analogies to routing and switching on the regular internet apply to routing and switching on the Lightning Network, except that on the internet, you're actually setting up physical lines and physical servers in order to create this vast global network, whereas on Bitcoin, you're creating Bitcoin transactions. That's it. So to create a new connection on the Lightning internet, quote unquote, you open up a channel and that's your Lightning infrastructure. That's your connection to the next server or the next quote unquote ISP or LSP, as the Breeze guys call it. Roy Scheinfeld, if you haven't listened to that episode, we go into that pretty in depth, called Lightning Service Providers. And that's how I like to think about it. It's really cool. Like, you know, Bitcoin is the broadcast layer, just like Ethernet. And then Lightning is the routing and connection layer, like TCP/IP. It's the unicast layer. Excuse me. So Bitcoin is broadcast. Lightning is unicast. And this is why I think this is going to be an entire financial infrastructure. This is going to be a new internet of money. And I think Lightning is the internet of money. And the fact that it's so compatible with so many other things, in the sense that you can easily experiment and put new software on Lightning that can speak the old Lightning channel format or system and a new one and bridge them together without anyone having to know. So it's not like Taproot on Bitcoin, where for us to implement Taproot or for us to implement SegWit and get these improvements to Bitcoin or these, you know, minor scaling improvements or the privacy improvements or whatever it is, we actually have to have the entire network, or at least a vast majority of it, like 90% of miners and as many nodes as possible and all that jazz. You want them to enforce it because that's a consensus system. Like, everyone needs to be validating the rules, or there's potentially some sort of transaction or some sort of block that could be found or written where part of the network thinks it's acceptable and another part of the network rejects it. And that's where you have the potential of a split or a huge orphan section, a way to like really attack the network. Like, everybody needs to be on exactly the same rules. And that's why you need backwards compatibility. That's why you don't want, centralization in this. That's a terrible thing and it runs a huge risk. And you want to give time for these upgrades. Lightning doesn't have that problem. So Lightning, Anybody can just run anything. Like I can run a sole client of my own that does some fancy trick and it puts me at risk. But I can completely change. Like I could run a Lightning version 2 node on the network and it would not really affect or change anything for anybody else on the Lightning network. And I obviously don't need anybody else to change for consensus reasons or anything because I'm the only one that's validating and basically settling or securing my own channels. Like it's mine. As long as I'm speaking the same Bitcoin language, I can speak whatever Lightning language I want. And that's the beauty of this, is that this is where all the innovation is going to happen. This is where the bulk of the financial services, where the payment networks, where the unique websites. In fact, Matt Odell, another thing that I saw on Twitter that I could not like and retweet, very sad, I'll do that tomorrow, I guess, was Matt Odell, the Atlenium? Oh God, I can't see this pronounce this. Etlenium. Atlenium. Predictions.atlenium.com. This is a Lightning predictions market, and there's a bunch of stuff you can predict. The Trump 2020 elections. Will Ethereum 2.0 mainnet be live? The one that he tweeted out. Will we get a Taproot? I think it's, what is it? A signaling mechanism for Taproot before the end of 2020. I'd say yes, but Joule and BTC Pay Server apparently do not work with LNURL yet, so I can't do it yet. I'm gonna have to figure out which one of my Lightning wallets can do this. But this is a pretty cool little thing, and it's a great way to do a little betting system on Lightning Network, how you can, in a sort of oracle, decentralized oracle sort of way. I mean, you have to trust the person who's basically making the declaration that it has been fulfilled or has not been fulfilled. But if you do, it's just a really cool way. And this is the kind of thing. This is just a simple, basic, application for Lightning Network. And you begin to see how much you can really play with this thing. This thing is going to be an entirely new network, an entirely new system. And right now I'm using it literally every day just as a payment system, but I don't think that will be like the use case for it. Well, I mean, kind of it will be. I'm really excited about Sphinx and what they're doing over there with the Lightning Chat app and being able to just spin up a pub key have encrypted messaging through the Lightning Network, which basically enables censorship resistance and end-to-end encryption in a like no bullshit way. Like I'm not even trusting a service anywhere to route my messages to somebody. They don't even have, like, there's nothing in it. I'm not trusting anybody. If I can trust my payment goes through, well then how easy is it to then turn around and be like, oh well yeah, I got an encrypted message. And that's a really, really cool use case. You could go on for hours and hours, and I want to talk about Lightning Network all day. It's just fascinating to see this come to fruition. And Taproot is going to be a major addition to all of this. This is where I really think Taproot shines. Just kind of laying the groundwork there with Lightning Network is why I think Taproot is massively valuable. One of the big things that it's going to enable is that we won't be able to see what is a Lightning channel and what is not anymore. We will not be able to just point at the Bitcoin chain and be like, this is a Lightning channel, this is a Lightning channel, opening, 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 closing, closing, closing. This is how big the Lightning Network is. The Lightning Network is going to get harder and harder to tell what the hell is going on, because Taproot enables obscuring all of the signature and script data. So I talked about earlier that if you have a single, a from address and a to address, and I just have one key signing it, well, that's one signature. Well, if I have a one address to a from address to a to address, and I have a 2 of 3 multi-sig, it shows all three of the signatures that need to be met and has a little script that says, if 2, then you're good to go. Like this is valid if 2 of 3 and then signatures underneath it is met. So that's a lot of data. Taproot and Schnorr signatures. This is essentially what makes Taproot possible. It's a new signature scheme. Makes it possible to have all of that be a single signature. And whether or not 2 people signed it, whether or not 1 person signed it, whether or not 50 people signed it, it is still a single signature. And it looks identical to any other Taproot transaction. So if it's a multi-signature, 2 of 2, with a Lightning channel, doesn't look any different than a regular transaction. If it's a 5 of 7 vault transaction with a standard 5 of 7 multi-sig, and then a time lock clause that if it's not met after 100 days, you can unlock it with this 2 of 3 signature. All of that wrapped up into a single, like what would be normally a really long, incredibly data heavy signature and script, looks like any other transaction, just a single script, and whatever inputs to whatever outputs would look just as if 1 person signed it. And now some people say, oh, goody, scaling. We can fit a couple more transactions in per block. That doesn't matter. I don't care about that. I mean, it's cool. Great. Cheaper transactions. Also, very good. This is a decent improvement. We want to be as efficient as possible with how much data we have to put on chain. But the two places where this really shines are validation time. The amount of computation it takes to prove that the signature has been met. I mean, think about it. If you've got a 5 of 7, you have to validate 5 things if it's signed properly. And then run through the whole script, whatever it is. Taproot, not only is the signature itself faster to validate, but it's only 1 signature. So if you've ever done a full sync of a Bitcoin node, you know that the first like 200,000 blocks fly, like just fly. Why? Because they're mostly empty. They're just barely a handful of transactions. It's only like block. I don't know. What was it? Shit. I'm not going to know when the Genesis transaction was made, when the very first transaction was made to how. And I'm very upset. I have failed as Guy Swan. I have fallen from the throne. I'm going to have to go to my own calendar on the cryptoeconomy.com calendar. All right. And Command F transaction. There you are. Genesis transaction day. Block 170. All this for just a random side point. Block 170 was the very first transaction that happened where Satoshi sent to Hal Finney 10 Bitcoin. So this and the incredibly light, almost non-existent use of Bitcoin for the first 200,000 or so blocks, they just fly in the sync process because there's so little data to validate. And it's just easy. The computer just, zips right through it. But then you start getting into like blocks 300,000 and stuff, and you're starting to see blocks all consistently have transactions. And, some big transactions like start to come in. And then you'll notice when you're in 400,000 and 500,000, it's slowing to a crawl. And that's because you have to validate it all. You have to validate all the signatures. You have to run through all the scripts and all this stuff. And of course, the blocks got bigger too. So this was one of the things about SegWit that was actually kind of contentious, was that it does add a lot more data to validate. And this threatens Bitcoin's decentralization. It threatens the network resilience to recover if a bug happens, or if something, you know, a bunch of nodes go down, or if there's a great firewall of China lockdown on being able to send Bitcoin information, like, et cetera, et cetera. We want to be able to bring up brand new nodes in the case that something goes wrong, or in the case that we add 20 million users, you don't want them to be dependent on the same, you know, you want subsequently a shit ton more nodes when there are a shit ton more users on the network. Otherwise, it's increasingly getting centralized to, you know, just Bitcoin maximalists validating the network. And we don't want that. We want everyone to be validating the network, all services, all businesses, everybody who has a substantial amount of savings. We want as many nodes as possible. So that continuing to get harder and continuing to require more and more computational power is not a good thing. This is where Taproot shines in a big way to start off with, is that massive decreases in computation time. So the more people use Taproot and TapScript, which is just the application of Taproot for scripts and signatures and shit, the more people use that, the faster we're going to go through. We'll still have that big chunk of, you know, blocks 400,000 to 600,000 that are really sluggish and take a long time to validate, but then it'll speed up as we get into 680,000 and people start using Taproot. And if we get full blocks that are just, you know, 80, 90% Taproot, things will really start screaming again. And I mean, obviously not as fast as a whole bunch of empty blocks, but you get the idea. It's just a lot more efficient that way. So that's the first one where I really think this is a huge improvement. The second one, and the more important one in my opinion, the really big thing that Taproot is bringing to the base chain that's really difficult to achieve, and luckily all the economics of all of this are aligned properly to make this happen, is privacy. I can have a 5 of 7 multi-sig vault with a time lock, with a backup contract, with a 3 of 5 in case of something goes wrong, with a lawyer, with multiple people in my family of like separate keys, all of this written into a script in Taproot, and nobody will be able to look at the blockchain and know that any of it is there. I will be able to open a Lightning Network channel, and no one will have a clue that I have opened up a Lightning Network channel. If I want to keep that private, my channel will not respond to requests on the gossip network. I will not route, but I will be able to spend onion routed transactions on the Lightning Network without anyone knowing I'm connected to it, and I can close it without anyone knowing that I was on it. Coin joins, batching transactions. Now there is something called cross input signature aggregation, that is not in this version, but basically, it is, we are one step closer. This is the signature scheme needed in order to then write that code. So this is step one of that process to doing so. And what that means, cross input signature aggregation, don't you just love all these fun terms? What that means is that rather than just having all of our script and multisig in a single transaction be one signature, well, what if you could add your transaction, and which would be one signature? I could add my transaction, which would be one signature. Somebody else could add theirs. My friend could add theirs. Everybody in the Satoshi Audionauts group, intergroup supporting the show, they could all add theirs, and they all have their one signature. Well, cross-input signature aggregation means that we can actually just take all of those different signatures from all of those different participants and then mush all of those down into a single signature. And now nobody knows which signature goes to which input and of course, which output. Well, nobody's signed for any of the outputs. But now the ownership of any individual of those inputs is not connected to anything. There is one signature that spins all of it. And this is the thing that will get us there. That's a whole nother level of privacy. But again, TapScript though, just right now, because there's a lot of cooperative signing and you're looking at, you know, multi-signature and batch transactions and all this stuff, this will help to obfuscate the fact that people are doing coin joins. This will help to make that more efficient and quicker to validate. And that's basically true for all transaction types. Any sort of complexity or vault or anything like this, not only does this make a wider range of signature methods available, like tools essentially available to us, but it also obscures what of any of them we are using behind a single signature. And that is really the beauty of this thing, in my opinion. The 90% out of the 100% of its value is in that right there, is in the privacy, the extra functionality, the faster validation and thus syncing of any full nodes. And then that last little bit is, yeah, we can squeeze in some more data. And yes, it takes up less space on the blockchain. But in my opinion, those are mostly a consequence of the real value that Taproot provides. And this is also going to make a new version of Lightning possible. So this is also, like I talked about, the cross-input signature aggregation thing is basically step two in this process, and Taproot is step one. Well, another major part of this that Schnorr Signatures and Taproot enable is the next version of Lightning, which will actually solve a lot of those problems as well. A lot of the limitations that Lightning has are like how much data needs to be stored to enforce the current state, like the valid state of a Lightning channel in the case of contestation, in case that somebody is challenging what the quote unquote truth of your Lightning channel is. Well, you need to give proof that that is not the truth, that they are cheating. And that takes a lot of data. The longer a channel lasts, the more data it takes to essentially be able to prove that for anything in that channel's past. And this is one of those tools that is a huge leap toward making it that all you need is one piece of data, and it enables you to generate the insurance clause for every previous state, essentially. That all you need is the latest state of the channel, and it invalidates everything previous to it. And that's going to just make Lightning more efficient. And there's just so many different improvements and kind of ways that this can be used. And that's what we've already thought about and already discovered. And the beauty of this is that there's going to be a whole new array of people now looking at this differently and having an entirely new set of tools and a lack of limitation in what they can do. And, you know, to be able to add all of this complexity without worrying about additional cost, like this is just going to be a really, really big moment in Bitcoin history, I think. And amazingly, this is not contentious. It doesn't seem like there's, you know, nobody has thrown up like any major concerns about Taproot, the minor issues around like, oh, it takes one more bit to do this, have all been sorted and in fact aren't even necessary. It seems like this is all around nothing but positives for Bitcoin. So we could get activation once we have an activation method, which again, I think is going to be a BIP-8 activation, or at least that's what I'm hoping for. And that's kind of what it seems like so far, is that it's just going to be you download this and install it and you're signaling for it and boom, it activates after this span of time. I think we'll get signature. I mean, I think we'll get activation pretty quick. Even though the network is a lot more decentralized and we have a lot of miners involved in this, you know, it's up to us to get the word out, you know, hashtag Taproot2020, share it out and make sure everybody, you know, who is mining, every mining pool, like get them on board with this. This doesn't mean they have to use Taproot when this does finally land in a client. It just means that they need to download and enforce it for other people who choose to use it. Again, this is a backwards compatible upgrade to the network Nobody is forced to use it if they're worried about the risk or anything like that. It's just that everybody needs to know that it needs to be running all of the same validation rules. So hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, blessed be Satoshi, that we get this sooner rather than later. It's just really, really exciting to see this merged into the code and take another huge leap toward the final activation and a release of this on the Bitcoin system. So hopefully we covered everything I wanted to talk about. I think I hit all the stuff, but just Taproot's just really cool. If you want to dig a lot deeper into this, we have many, many episodes that we have talked about Taproot in depth. Great piece from Bitcoin Magazine, Aaron Van Wortem, that just digs all into Taproot and what it is and all that sort of stuff. So if you want to go a little bit further, I definitely recommend going back and listening to some of those episodes and or reading those pieces. But for now, we will close out this Guide's Take episode. Another thank you to Hexel Wallet for sponsoring the show, and to everyone in my crew. We got a new crew member just today, and it's always exciting, and I love it when new people are supporting the podcast. Thank you so much. If you want to be a part of the crew, let me know. All you have to do is give a donation or become a patron on patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy is the name it is under. And if you want to do that, you'll get a shoot me a DM. I'll get you a link and get you in the crew. All we do is we hang out and we talk shit and we talk about Bitcoin. And it's also a really, really great resource for asking questions. Everybody's so knowledgeable in there. So if you want to join in, all it takes is as little as a dollar. We'll get you in the group. I just want to save it for specifically supporters of the show. If you want me to be a contact on your Hexel wallet or be a part of your backup, feel free to message me. I have done it now for numerous people, and happy to answer any questions. It's just a cool wallet with a lot of features, and of course they're supporting the show as well. So much love to those guys. With that, let's go ahead and close this one out. Thank you so much for listening to Bitcoin Audible. Taproot is on the horizon. I'm so excited. I took my shot in celebration, and I can't wait for the next steps of this. And you will hear all about it right here on Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Cryptoeconomy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.